Chapter 2 this morning. So if you
have your Bibles with you, turn to Romans chapter 2.
What's that? Sure. It's kind of strange. Is that it's not rubbing anything, is it? You can't hear this at all.
Turn that off, try this.
That's old school.
Old school. Good morning. We're going to be in Romans chapter 2 this morning. So over the last couple weeks, we've been in Romans chapter 1, and that's some tough stuff to read, isn't it? And I think sometimes we have a tendency to read chapter 1 or to study chapter 1, and we see the wrath of God, and nobody likes talking about the wrath of God because it just doesn't fit sometimes our picture of who God is. Or maybe it's the only thing that fits. Sometimes we walk around in life thinking God's just waiting to zap you. Don't raise your hand, but is anybody like that? Or you're just walking around in life and you're kind of looking, right? And you're looking because you're just sometimes fearful. And so many times fear is a great motivator, wouldn't you agree? Sometimes we don't do things. We make some choices of not to do something based solely out of fear. So fear is not a bad motivator. Matter of fact, I would say to a large degree, it's a good motivator. But the reality is God has never wanted us to be motivated solely out of fear. Fear may be what leads you to Him. But as we're going to see in Romans chapter 5, I don't know when we're going to get there, but we'll get there eventually. But in Romans chapter 5, fear can't sustain. Fear has no ability to sustain. And what do I mean by that? Anybody gotten a speeding ticket? Go ahead and raise your hand. Oh, there's some really good drivers in here who never speed. All right? All right, for you speeders out there, The people that it's like 8 over because a law enforcement officer won't mess with me if it's 8 over. 10, he's going to get me. But 8, for you speeders out there, if you get pulled over and are given a ticket, how do you drive for about the next 30 days? A little more conscious, right? And then how about day 45 and day 60? How about day 90 when probation finally leaves, right? And the ticket falls off your... So it motivates us in inception, but it doesn't sustain. It might drive us to the cross, the reality of who we are. It might drive us to the cross, but it doesn't sustain us. And so sometimes we have this image of God. Sometimes we have this Old Testament image of God where you see no mercy, you see no grace. You just see the law, and people either follow it or they don't follow it. Yeah, you see God wipe out nations, and so we have this image of who God is. And so when we read something like the wrath of God, maybe that's our picture of who God is. Or maybe our picture of God is on the other side, right? It's just grace, abundant grace. Like he wouldn't send me to hell. You know, he wouldn't judge me. And so I guess what Paul in this letter is trying to get us to see. We spent 2 weeks in the first chapter of Romans, and we read a lot of despicable things about God's natural order and giving people over to the unnatural desires that they have. And we might be reading that text or going through that text, and you may have left here after the last 2 weeks of services going, "Woo, sure glad that's not me. Sure glad that's not my trouble. This chapter 2 is coming." So let's read part of chapter 2. It says, "Therefore," and you guys know my opinion on the word "therefore." It means, what's it there for? It's tying chapter 1 to chapter 2. "You have no excuse, O man. Every one of you who judges, for in passing judgment on another, you condemn yourself, because you, the judge, practice the very same things." See, this whole list that we could look at and we could say, "Man, that's despicable. That's ugly. That's evil in its totality, and it's shameful." And we walked out of services going, "Woo, man, That's, I mean, can you imagine God giving them up? I mean, can you really fathom the idea of God giving them up to their unnatural desires? And basically saying, here's God's first judgment. I'm giving you over to what you desire. Even though it's in contradiction to who I am, I'm giving you up to that. And here in the very first verses of chapter 2, he says, for we pass judgment on each other. We look at the outside world and we're like, man, has anybody ever said this? This week, this world is getting bad. Yeah, right? We say that. And we stand there and we make, it wasn't like this when I was a kid. How many of you guys? Yeah, it was. Is this way back then? And sometimes we forget our humanness and the evil sometimes that perpetuates itself in human desire. And so Paul is saying, listen, it's interesting to me that Paul kind of hammers this in chapter 1, this stuff that we can look at and we can go, yep, 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 man, this world's going to hell in a handbasket. And we can look at that and we can say, man, I'm glad I'm not part of it. And then he says, therefore, you who pass judgment, practice the very same things. You who are religious, do the exact same stuff. We know that the judgment, verse 2, of God rightly falls on those who practice such things. Do you suppose, O man, you who judge those who practice such things and yet do them yourselves, that you will escape the judgment of God? Or do you presume that on the riches of his kindness and forbearance and patience, not knowing that God's kindness is meant to lead you to repentance? Do you rest your case on the fact that, oh, God wouldn't do that? But because, verse 5, of your hard and impotent heart, you are storing up wrath for yourselves on the day of wrath when God's righteous judgment will be revealed. He will render to each one according to his works. It's interesting to me the amount of debate that's on verse 6. In Romans chapter 2. Because Paul would tell you that it's not by works that you're saved, but by faith in God. But what I want you to see in verse 6 is there's a connection, if you will. James talks about it. Show me a faith without works, and I'll show you a faith that's dead. See, sometimes we just get the cart before the horse. We want to work our way into a place of acceptance. And God's saying, if this is who you are, everything about you is going to change. But the reality is, so many times in our lives, we don't see ourselves through the same light or the same lens that we see the world. So we're going to take a test this morning. I know y'all didn't sign up for that, but you're here, and I locked the back door. So you're here. I'm going to have Caleb and Asher pass this test out for you, and then we'll go through it. Go ahead. We like tests in society, don't we? What's Jaden? What's the tests that you guys take? Personality, like Enneagram. What is it? Enneagram. Yeah, we take all these tests, right, to see who we are, what we look like, and you know, you can take a test to see what cheese you are, and there's all kinds of tests. So I thought, you know, for a society that likes testing to see who they are, let's test and see who we are in terms of relationship with God. These guys are a little slower than I thought. I picked 8 out of the 10 commandments. We're going to go through them this morning. And if you notice, there's a highlighted part for you to check mark yes or no. If there's not a pen or pencil in front of you, I'd ask that you reach over and see if there's one in the aisle behind you or in front of you. All right, here we go. Question 1. You shall have no other gods before me. Can you say, I never put anything before God in my life? I have never loved or trusted or obeyed anything more than God. God has always been preeminent in my thoughts, affections, and actions. Worshiping Him has always been the greatest passion of my life. Check mark. Yes or no? This is just the Ten Commandments, right? He's talking to the Jew here, which in today's terminology might say he's talking to Christians. And as a Jew or as a Christian, we should know the Ten Commandments, right? And they should give us some guidance. Number three, I skipped two, I'm on to three. I'm not skipping these because of my own answers. Just some are easier to explain. You shall not take my name in vain. That's the commandment. I have always held the name of God in highest respect, never uttering it carelessly. Nor have I ever desecrated God's name by calling myself his follower, yet not representing him well. The way I talk, act, spend money, and drive give honor to God, whose name I attach to myself and whose bumper sticker I plaster on my car. Yes or no? Number five, honor your parents. It's a good one. Right, Hunter? I wouldn't actually, believe it or not, he kind of had a rodeo with his oldest this morning, which made me smile a little. So I'm really thinking about that, not that anything else. I have always respected and obeyed the authorities in my life and give them honor and willing obedience whether they are watching or not. This includes my parents, my teachers, traffic cops, and the IRS. Yes or no? You shall not kill. I have never murdered anyone. Maybe you can say this, but remember what Jesus did with this commandment on the Sermon on the Mount. So you have to be able to say this. Nor have I had hateful thoughts, nor have I taken the slightest pleasure in seeing harm done to another human being. I have never wished harm on anyone, even when they really angered me. Yes or no? You shall not commit adultery. I have never had sex with someone outside of the bond of marriage, nor have I ever entertained sexual thoughts about someone I am not married to. Yes or no? You shall not steal. I have never taken anything that doesn't belong to me. This includes downloading illegal music, cheating in school, or fudging on my taxes. I have always respected the belongings, rights, creations of others, and been completely truthful and fair, taking only what I've earned. I have never taken extra Chick-fil-A sauce to stock my shelves at home, or shampoo and soap from a motel room. I have never wasted my company's time surfing the web, tweeting, or Facebooking. I've never taken credit that didn't belong to me, nor have I ever let others assume good things about me that weren't true. Yes or no? You shall not lie. I've never bent the truth to get out of a bad situation. I never stretched the truth to make myself look better. I have never slandered anyone. I have always told the truth in every situation regarding every person I have ever known, and I have always fulfilled any promises that I've made. Yes or no? You shall not covet. I have never been greedy for something that wasn't mine, nor have I been jealous of the abilities, looks, position, or possession of others. I have rejoiced with others in what they have, glad that they made it, even when I don't. I have never complained about what God has provided for me, and always been thankful and content with what I have and where I am in life. Yes or no? So now take your test and swap with a neighbor. I'm just kidding. Everybody's like folding it up. Hey, so, I mean, and this is kind of Paul's talking in Romans 2. He's saying, listen, you guys, you religious people, you know, we went through the first chapter of Romans and you religious people are kind of doing this. Or some of us may not have, right? But the reality is, then Paul gets to 2 and says, you religious people are worse. You guys are worse than these guys because you claim to be something you're not. When an unreligious person, a person who doesn't know Jesus, looks at you and you're supposed to be the guiding light of who Jesus is, and they go, you don't look any different than I do. I mean, there's so much hypocrisy in that. And so I want you guys to see some of this. So the million-dollar question is, what does your life declare about your belief or your surrender to Jesus? It's easy to say one thing. It's easy to say, all I have to do is have faith and I'll be saved. It's easy to claim this idea of Christianity without it allowing it to be transformative to your life. Because see, faith is on one hand a fantastic and beautiful thing. But if there's no transformation, what faith do you really have? They're connected. They're tied together. They go together. Becoming holy isn't necessarily a prerequisite for faith. But holiness is associated with faith. Verse 7, to those who by patience and well-doing seek for glory and honor and immortality, he will give eternal life. But for those who are self-seeking and do not obey the truth but obey unrighteousness, there will be wrath and fury. There will be tribulation and distress for every human being who does evil, the Jew first and also to the Greek. But glory and honor and peace to everyone who does good, the Jew first and also to the Greek, for God shows no partiality. He's saying, I don't care if you claim to be this. God doesn't look at it as I claim to be a Christian or I don't claim to be a Christian. There's no partiality. Either you're in him or you're not in him. Either there's evidence of your life that you're in him or there's not. There's no partiality. He's not going to judge somebody who is in chapter 1 any differently than he's going to judge somebody who is evident in chapter 2, who just sits there and looks at society and goes, shame on you. Shame on you. See, it's so easy for us to look at chapter 1 and get stuck there because there's such depravity in chapter 1. There's such ideology that is so in the face of who God has called us to be that it's easy for us to point at those things and go, yep, get them, God. But God is not interested in what you claim to be on the outside, but who you are on the inside. Best story I know to describe that. We had one rule for the boys growing up, but they would probably disagree with that, so I'm going to say we had a rule. How's that? If the boys wanted to have someone over to the house, Hunter, what was the one rule? His room had to be clean. You want to have somebody over, your bedroom's got to be clean. I can imagine as my boys would rush around to clean their bedroom up, right? And as mom would come in to inspect the bedroom, they were probably sitting on their bed going, please don't open the closet. Please don't open the closet. Man, don't open that closet. It could kill someone if you open that closet. And that's kind of how we are in our Christian walk. We figured out how to clean the bedroom, but we're saying, God, don't open the closet. Because all the junk, all the things that I don't want to get rid of or don't want to take the time to be responsible for, I'm going to shove those in the closet. God, please don't open the closet. And Paul is trying to get the reader here, which is us today, to say, quit trying to be something on the outside. God is interested on what is on the inside. He wants to know what's in your closet. If you can't, and man, you guys have heard me say this before. Man, I am talking to myself here. Because the reality is we paint ourselves in a way better light than we ought to. I'm not saying we should be walking around going Eeyore-ish. Oh, is me. It's not the point, but the point is we try to put ourselves in a way better light than we should. And what does that create in us? This is the problem Paul has, if you will. I'm going to look at some notes on this. This is the problem that Paul has with the religious, with the elite, with the people who say, I'm going to teach this, but Paul says in chapter 2, don't you teach yourself first? You're teaching people to adhere to this and to follow this, but what about you? You want people to do these things, but What are you willing to do? And so in the midst of that, we have, let me see if I can find this. Sorry. I can't, so. Okay, here it is. So this is from a gentleman named Tim Keller. Summarize Paul's attitudes towards religiosity this way: smug. There's several words I'm going to give you through this that I read from Tim Keller, not the mayor of Albuquerque, just so you know. I want to make sure I clarify that. So Tim Keller summarizes Paul's attitudes towards religiosity this way. Paul says it makes people smug. You just walk around with a subtle but nauseating air about you. I have everything together. I don't have the problems you people have because I just do a better job than you. And generally speaking, a better class of person. What I'm fixing to go through here is some words that oftentimes describe the religious. A smugness. Overly sensitive, because your identity is built on your righteousness, on your ability to be right. People can't ever undermine it or question it. If they do, it is deeply bothersome and devastating. Ask yourself, when someone confronts you about your sin, do you get defensive? Do you start mentally listing the problems that they have? Or do you receive that rebuke and legitimately ask God to help you hear it? Judgmental. You need to find others worse than you can feel good about yourself. So you are really critical of others, always finding fault. You are the kind of person that can point out something wrong with everyone. And when you see fault or weakness in others, you are not really compassionate. Hypocritical. We talked about that in the Sermon on the Mount series. Doing the right thing for the wrong reason. Having the right outward action, but inwardly we're wasting away. Any religion that does not begin with a deep experience of God's grace in the cross will leave you smug, overly sensitive, judgmental, hypocritical, and insecure. And you might say, that sounds like most Facebook Christians I read about. Well, you just committed the atrocity yourself. Because the reality, we have a tendency to judge people on a different scale than we judge ourselves. We have a tendency when we get the glimpse into somebody else's closet to have an attitude or an air about us. But that attitude and the air that we have about us is genuinely because they can't see in our closet. See, Paul is not letting off the religious. In chapter 2, he's actually hammering them. He's saying, oh, you who thinks you're better than everyone else because you go to church. Because you claim something. Because you say you are this, but away from here you're not. You guys have heard me say this before, and I want to leave you with this. There's more in chapter 2, and we'll get to that in 2 weeks. But you guys have heard me say this. There's a lot of people in life that fall 18 inches short of God's grace. They understand it up here. They know that there is a creator. They know that there is a God. They know that they need to have faith in that God. But the 18 inches from their head to their heart, there's a disconnect. We've become masters, and that's what Paul is addressing here. We've become masters at perfecting our shell and concealing our closet. We've become very good at cleaning our bedroom. so that when people walk in, does anybody like inspect closets when you go over to somebody's house? No, nobody does that. We know that, right? Or how about look under the bed? Does anybody ever look? Hey, thanks for inviting us over. I'm just going to check your closet and look under your bed. Nobody does that, right? And we know that. And so there's things about our lives that it's just easier to keep bottled up and to become prisoners of. Because the reality is, I can keep it from the world. And God is saying it's ruling you. It has mastered over you. Because you won't bring it into the light. Now that should be convicting to each of us. I know it's heavily convicting to me. God's saying, I don't want to just be God of your bedroom and Lord of your bedroom. I want to be Lord of your life. I want to be Lord of your whole house. That's all the crevices. It's all the closets. You know, Lana keeps a really clean home. I'm always appreciative of that. Sometimes it's overwhelming, but I'm always appreciative of that. And she kept running into the dirt monster yesterday. I don't know, till we went to bed. She'd walk across our floor and she's like, there's dirt and it's grimy and I feel like I need to mop at 10:30 at night. Right? She's laughing, but it's true. I was there. I'm a witness. You know, and I appreciate that. Because me, I'm like, it's just a little dirt. That little bit of dirt can turn into a great big mess. So oftentimes in our lives, we conceal what separates us the most. And Paul is saying, man, your religion isn't going to save you. Y'all hear that? Your religion is not going to save you. God is. And the God that we serve wants to be God of the whole house. Not just the parts that you want him to see, or the parts that you want mankind to see, but the parts that are all a part of who we are. There's humility in that. Remember that list? Hypocrisy. Sensitive, judgmental, smug. Man, those things don't belong because those are based on your righteousness. And as Paul is telling the Jews in this chapter, your righteousness isn't going to get you there. It's not even going to get you halfway there. Only the blood of Jesus Christ will. And in that, there's tremendous humility. Because in that, you recognize and realize that your efforts to gain that or garner that will be fruitless. This morning I want to challenge y'all with this message. I probably shouldn't hear this morning as I'm standing at the back. Man, I'm sure enjoying this lesson in Romans. I'm guessing y'all aren't going to say that. If you are, if you do tell me that this morning, you weren't listening. Because I didn't hear any amens this morning. I did hear a few oh my's. So I want to challenge y'all that it gets better. It gets better in Romans. But sometimes we got to face these things to appreciate the better. So we're going to face these things together so we can appreciate the better that Paul gets to in the back half of Romans. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, I'd ask that you come.